everyone. I'm Dina Lewis, and you're listening to As Seen by Us.
Straight to the pinnacle, rose from the bottom in intervals. Dreamed of the visuals and watch it come to life just like a miracle.
On today's episode, I'm excited to have my dear friend and colleague, Lorenzo Brown, or Zo, join us on today's show. Zo is currently a professor of sociology, but also a dynamic singer, author of the book titled From No to Go, entrepreneur, leader, organizer, and fellow podcaster. All of which you will hear about when we hear from Zo in a moment. Fun fact, Zo and I used to sing on the worship team together at church in the city, and we both auditioned for Hamilton. Zo is someone who I've always felt safe with on stage because I knew and still know to this day that Zo has my back. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I'm excited to introduce to you my friend, my brother, Zo.
Hey, Zo, how's it going?
It's going very well.
I'm so happy to hear that. My day has gotten better now that we got to do this.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I was definitely looking forward to it.
Yay. So we will be doing a scene today from The Mountaintop by Katori Hall. And this piece is near and dear to my heart because I actually use one of the monologues from Kamei as my go-to audition pieces. You will be reading for a legendary person.
Yes.
Go ahead and tell the people who you're playing today.
I am playing the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Okay. No pressure.
No pressure. Only one of the greatest people ever, but you know, mm-hmm. It's an honor. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So whenever you are ready, we can begin.
All right. Well, I'm not perfect.
That you ain't.
Hey, don't judge me, you cussing, fussing, drinking angel.
Well, God know what you like, huh?
Hey, that ain't fair now.
The truth ain't got to be fair. It's the truth.
But why you?
Believe you me, I ain't want this job. First day, bring over you, the Kang. I ain't want to do it. But God been getting these prayers from a little one named Bunny. Please, God, don't let my daddy die alone. Well, just about broke my heart. I just had to come.
You know her nickname? Bernice? My sweet Bernice? My baby girl spoke to you?
Her prayers are powerful. I can tell she's yourn. She got to way with words. A gift. Sounding like she gonna be a preacher one day. I don't like cheering too much, but she's something.
My bunny, my baby girl, even she knows.
Yes, I gotta take you to the other side. Look, I know you afraid, Preacher Kane.
How you know I'm afraid?
Because you should be.
Talk about fear, Kame. Well, I have felt fear. Felt it in my guts. Felt it in my toes. Felt it even when I stood in front of my own congregation in my own church. There beneath that old rugged cross, I quaked and shook with fear. My insides churned and I fought hard to keep them from leaping out of my mouth. You see, a Negro man is not safe in the pulpit, not even in the pulpit of his own making. Sunday mornings have been mornings when I am most afraid, because in this country, a pulpit is a pedestal, and we all know that. In America, the tall tree is felled first. Tall trees have more wood to burn, Kame. We are the sacrifice.
You've been knowing I was coming, haven't you?
Yes. Oh, yes, I've dreamed of you. Rather had nightmares. In my darkest hours, I've even prayed for you with eyes wide open. Been so many death threats that some nights I've even asked God, please, just get it over with. Even tonight at the church, Who knew death would be so beautiful? Almost make a man want to die.
You not afraid of me?
Fear has become my companion, my lover. I know the touch of fear even more than I know the touch of my own wife. Fear, Kameh, is my best friend. She is the reason I get up in the morning, because I know if I'm still afraid, then I am still alive.
Tomorrow, when it time, you gonna have to take my hand.
Tomorrow? But I'm not ready to die. I still got so much work to do.
But God say it time.
No, it's not my time. I am ready. I still have so much work to do.
Preacher Kang.
My country, tis of thee.
You making my job harder.
My country, who doles out constant misery.
Harder than it already is.
War abroad, then war in your streets. Arrogant America.
This is hard on me.
Hard on you? What about it being hard on me, on my family, on Corey, on the movement? Has God thought about that?
God ain't the one you need to be mad at while you up there yelling. God ain't the one you need to be blaming.
Then who needs to be blamed?
It ain't who needs to be blamed, Preacher Kang. It's what. It ain't a who, it's a what, Preacher Kang. Evil is not under God's jurisdiction, but good. Good is.
Well, can't you stop it? Catch whatever's coming?
That ain't my job. God said I gotta get you ready to come on home.
So tell me about this scene, and do you have any connections with it, like as you were working with it?
Well, I would say there was an immediate connection right from the beginning when he started off with, you know, well, I'm not perfect. Because I think, you know, when people get public narratives of you, and they could almost, you know, either make you out to be perfect or, you know, completely the opposite of that, you know. And I'm not sure if neither one of them are good, because, you know, neither is true. You know, nobody's all perfect and nobody's, you know, like all like jacked up or whatever the opposite of perfect is. Imperfect.
Yeah.
You know, so I think with the position that he was in, and, you know, just the legacy that he left and the things that he did for people, you know, people expected perfection almost. And, you know, he wasn't. I'm not. Neither are you. And so I related to that, you know, right off the back. And then I think the fear of something impending. Now, I can't say like the fear of, I mean, because I can't even compare any fears I had, because he pretty much knew he was going to die. You know, he was in a position where it made it very likely for him to be killed, and it did happen. And he knew it, and he lived with that fear. And, you know, he didn't, that didn't make him fade into the background and say, oh, let me just be like an average Joe and live an average life, because, you know, that way I won't have, like, you know, this type of attention, and I won't be on this platform, you know.
Yeah.
And he could have just lived, just, you know, lived the average life and, you know, had his wife and kids and just been, you know, a regular preacher, you know. But he chose a different path and was fearful the whole time. And as far as fear being his companion, you know, I think we've all been afraid before, but I have to say I can't relate to that, because that means fear in his life was pervasive. But his calling wasn't about feeling good, though. So
yeah, I wonder if that's what the fear felt like for him. Like, you know, every time he got up to speak, every march he led, it's like that reminder, that siren going off in the back of his head, like, hey, this might be my last march, y'all. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. And the,
like,
thing,
you know,
about
that old hymn?
You said the old hymn?
Yeah, the one that goes, this may be the last time. I don't know.
I mean, that's some real stuff, you know. It really is. This may be the last time. And here's the thing. We can go, all of us can go any day from anything, but we don't live in that, though. You understand what I'm saying? You don't like live in the fear, like, oh, when I walk outside, I could be hit by a car. Or, like, you know, of course these things can happen, but we don't live there. And he lived there. And, you know, that's deep.
And then I feel, though, that there's some people now in the wake of, you know, these new protests and riots that are going off about Breonna Taylor.
Oh,
I feel like, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I was disgusted when I heard about that today. I was.
Her life is worth $12 million. Like, for real?
Right.
We can pay for a life now.
Yeah, right. You know, and then and that's supposed to satisfy her family. Like, mm-hmm. yeah. That's not justice. Might be some restitution, but, you know, I wouldn't call that justice. You know, I just feel as though even if it was a mistake, that's a big mistake. And they need to be held accountable for it, regardless if it was, you know, okay, they ruled out they didn't maliciously go there with intent. All this legal, you know, this legalese, but still and all, if they were responsible for the death of a person, she died for no reason, you know. And the fact that there's no accountability for it, you know, but not the justice that we want, you know, it was really a disgusting feeling, you know. It almost makes you relive the horror, you know, just imagine how her family feels.
Yeah. I guess that's what I was saying, like, go against what you were saying a little bit, just picking at the scab of not living in that place. As a Black woman in America, we could feel very much like we're living in that place of fear.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, and I'm like comparing myself, you know, to him, you know, just because he was on that platform. But you're absolutely right. You know, and we have to consider that, you know, there are, you know, Black women, especially feeling like the most undervalued humans in society.
Yeah.
Living in a land where this could happen to you, and that's just, you just have to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm. And in a way, I feel like this play and this scene is healing in the sense that she chooses a Black woman, Angel, to bring Dr. King over. Like, that's powerful in itself, because Dr. King was birthed from a woman, right? From a Black woman.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's so symbolic that he's going to be taken to heaven by yet another Black woman.
Yeah.
And I think that was intentional by the playwright.
Yeah, I definitely hope it was, just because, you know, I think our experience in America is not Black angels. It's white angels with blonde hair and white dresses. You know, that's not the image, you know, that has been pushed in different, you know, biblical settings or, you know, religious, when you see the depictions of angels. So, I'm definitely thinking that was, you know, very intentional.
Yeah, even the line where you say cussing, fussing, drunken angel.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's also just so beautifully representative of Jesus. And like, we have passed, you know, we all fall short from the grace.
Yeah.
And, you know, we live in a world of sin and we are sin, but Jesus and Jesus alone can heal and give us that redemption, which I think is so beautiful. Like, yeah, I know I have a past. I'm a cussing, fussing, drinking.
Right.
Angel, but
right. But even I am loved by God. Even me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So good. Yeah. So tell me, how do you define hope?
You know, when I hear the word hope, I think the purpose of the word is definitely something that is positive. And especially when we look in a, like a biblical sense, or, you know, a religious sense. And the hope that we have is that, you know, by accepting Jesus into our hearts, that we would go to heaven, right? You know, and we do that and we live this way and honor him, you know, in hopes that that would happen. I think it's something that to look forward to, but I don't know if it's always used with that same, in that same context, because I believe that, you know, although the intent of that word might have been something to look forward to, but the way it's used has, you know, subjectively meaning almost in a, like it's wrapped in, you know, doubt or uncertainty. Mm-hmm. Like, I hope this happens for me, or I hope I don't get in trouble, or I hope I get the job, you know. And so it really depends on how it's being used and in what context.
Good.
Because I think in some contexts, hope doesn't sound like it's wrapped in confidence. It sounds like it's wrapped in doubt. You know, I guess, like, you know, when you know something, say, I know this is going to happen, you know, I believe this is going to happen. You know, I think that's more confident. But I think the way it's been used, just in this English language, you know, and you know, as context and meanings change, I think it's been used when it's wrapped in a little bit more of I hope I don't, or I hope this, or I hope that, you know, you know, when you're worried about you possibly not getting something or achieving something, whether it's for you or someone else. So I think it's always good to have these discussions with language and certain words, because they may mean something, but they may not be used in the original way that it was meant to be used. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think hope is a good thing to have, but I think you need to rest in exactly what hope maybe was meant to convey, which is more of a confidence. Like, I have hope we will overcome. It looks really bad, right? But mm-hmm. we have hope that this too shall pass, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think it's important to make sure that your hopes are wrapped in confidence and not worry or doubt.
What happens though when they are wrapped in doubt and they are wrapped in worry? Like, how do you get from that definition of hope to the other spectrum of hope, which is the confidence?
You know, so I can talk about this in context of, you know, I just recently closed in the house, talked to you about that before. And it was something that I was, you know, working on, you know, for quite some time. You know, I had actually moved back in with my mother. I was renting and I moved back in with my mother. And I said, you know, I will not rent anymore. You know, the next place I live is going to be a home that I buy. And, you know, I didn't hope that it happened. You know, I was working toward it. It was a goal. And I came all the way up to the point where I put a bid on a house and accepted it. And I was under contract and everything was going well. But then things started dragging out for a little bit too long. And I started to feel a little concerned, you know, that it may not happen. Right. And I started to feel a little worry and maybe a little doubt. And, you know, I remember, you know, being on the phone with the realtor and the lawyer, and they were going back and forth, and they trying to figure out what's going on. And I could just hear all this noise going back and forth. And then I looked on my phone, and there's a picture of my grandmother who just passed away last month. She was 92. And, you know, yeah, you know, but I looked at her picture and I looked into her eyes. And I felt her say, "Don't worry, baby, you're going to get this house." And I didn't hope anymore, because before I was like, you know, when I started to get into that nervous phase, I'm like, oh, I hope this works out. But when I felt that from her, I knew it was going to happen because I had the confidence again, you mm-hmm. know. So I think when I lost some of the confidence, I got like a little hopeful, like, oh, I hope this doesn't fall through. I hope this works out. I know when I felt my grandmother tell me that, I had confidence once again. I said, okay, good. I don't have to worry anymore. I don't have to hope it's going to happen because I know it's going to happen, right? And I think, and I'm handling the word based on the, I guess, the current way that I've observed that it was being used, you know. So I'm sure hope definitely a good thing, but I just think in my experience, my own personal subjective experience, and you know, maybe other interactions of things that I've noticed that people say and how they've used it, it's usually used with more like worry and anxiety, like, oh, you know, chattering, biting your nails, like, uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it's such a real thing. I'm glad you brought light to that, because that's something that no one ever really talks about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that hope isn't really the confident assuredness. Mm-hmm. It's you. Like the doubt that you mm-hmm. said. And I love that you said you heard your Nana say, "Don't worry, I know you're going to get this house."
Mm-hmm.
Because it almost seems you had to be in a place of stillness mm-hmm. to receive that spiritual insight.
Oh, yes. I was absolutely still. Like, and there were people talking, you know, they were like, "Oh, I don't know what's going on. We have to figure it out. And I'm going to call and I'm going to tell them that you're going to blah, blah, blah." And then it just became noise. And I just kind of cut out all the noise, and I'm just looking at my Nana, and she said, "Don't worry, baby, you're gonna get this house." I mean, I heard her just like she would say it, you know. Mm-hmm. Look, it wasn't audible, like, I'm not trying to, but I felt it.
Yes, I got you. I know you have a podcast, you had a book out. Can you share some of that with our listeners?
Yes. So I do have a book. The name of the book is called From No to Go, There Is No GPS for Your Journey to Success, published in 2018. And, you know, happy to say it's still getting momentum, especially due to the fact, well, when I self-published, so, you know, I'm not on, I didn't put myself, you know, I'm not with a publisher and have the platform. So I kind of hustled and with this book on my own because I'm a professor. Yeah, I work at three schools and I have classes at all three schools that have my book as a required reading. So that's been a huge blessing. You know, happy that the book is blessing so many of my students. I, you know, just saw order coming today, you know, so just a huge blessing.
It's amazing. Where can we find it if our listeners want to purchase a copy?
You can go to www.fromno2go.com, fromno2go.com, and order the books and they will be sent to you. You can also go on like barnesandnobles.com if you want to get it. But just hint, hint, it might cost a little bit more on Barnes & Nobles. If you get it directly from our website, you know, it'll be about $20. So
awesome. Good to know. And tell us about your podcast.
Yeah. So the podcast is called From No to Go Radio, named for the book. And I have about 12 episodes of it with it, you know. So it was like a real creative outlet for me. But when things got really heavy in my life, I'm like, okay, I'm going to put the podcast on hold for now. Like I told you, you know, I just lost my grandmother. I just bought a house. You know, I worked completely through COVID, you know, as far as, you know, teaching and working for the church, directing outreach and missions. And, nice. You know, I think I like my life and being able to manage the things that I want to do and, you know, making a decision to do the work, you know, that I love and, you know, and, you know, just having control over that as well. So, I love podcasting. So when you told me you were doing this, I said, let's do it.
Yes. You're like the perfect person. Like, y'all, I haven't seen Zoe in like 3 years.
I know. So
it was also just divine alignment. There's that word again.
Yeah. Alignment.
Yeah.
Like that's the word of the day is alignment.
Yeah. Word of the day, y'all, listening to this episode, it's alignment. Get into alignment. Yeah. We ran into each other at a mutual friend's Sunday brunch. It was so fun. Shout out to Baby Freedom and Philip and Joy Atmore and the Bakers.
No, man. You know, and I think just because of COVID and like me not thinking I was going to ever hang out with people again. You know, it's like kind of like after the storm, the sun coming out, like, oh, like we can kind of spend time with people, you know, and you know, break bread together. And, you know, and maybe we're not doing it every week or with everybody, you know, but it was just nice to do it with friends and still come out healthy and safe.
On top of it all, you know, like to come out healthy and then to be reconnected, like, oh, you're still in the city. And anyways, when, I saw you, I told you this scene was on pause, y'all, because I know, and as I'm sure you'll agree, it needs a special voice to play Dr. King, and that wasn't in my Rolodex, so to speak. So, it was just divine alignment. When I ran into you at the brunch, I was like, yep, I forgot Zoe's voice. We also, fun fact, used to worship together at church. We were on the worship team. Uh-huh. It just felt good to see you again. And thank you so much for saying yes and blessing us with this amazing other gift that you have now. You can put acting on your resume, Zoe. Yes,
thank you. Thank you. You know, So like another fun fact, yes, Dean and I sang together on a worship team. And Dina also was very instrumental in encouraging me to try out for Broadway. You know, truth moment, Broadway was something that I always wanted to do, you know, and I still wanted to, you know, do it. You know, I still would probably drop everything I'm doing if I got signed to a show.
And you will. I see it. He's not going to tell you his first ever audition for Broadway, y'all, and he got called back.
It's the second one.
But still, like, it took me how many years I've been living in the city and auditioning, going to all these cattle calls, and it honestly took me my fifth year to get a call back for after auditioning for 4 years. So that's a big deal. I don't know if you know that, but I just had to put that out there.
It was really exciting. And, you know, I just brief story. So I tried out for one show. It was Dreamgirls with Dina.
Yeah.
and I made a big mistake. I decided that I was going to try out with a song that I did not know. So I said, I'm going to sing Superstition by Stevie Wonder. And I'm familiar with the song, but I'm not familiar enough to know the words. So I literally stayed up all night until I learned the words and got them down packed. And I did learn the words. And when I woke up in the morning, I didn't know them. I woke up in the morning, I was like, I don't know it. And I went to the audition and I did it. I sang the whole way through, but I made up a lot of words and they knew I did it. And I knew I did.
Remember what you made up? Like, what were the words you made up?
I just know, like, it's very superstitious, writers on the wall. And then I started putting lyrics that came toward the end, like, in the beginning. I was like, I don't even remember, but I know they had to be laughing. And, oh, my God, I think I was dancing, too.
Oh, but that's good. I mean, unless you were doing a full dance number then.
No, I wasn't doing a full dance number, but I was like, you know, I was like snapping my fingers and moving
side. Oh, they love that, though. They love that. Oh. Y'all, yeah. Broadway auditions, let's not scare the people. They're not that intense. Like, the directors actually love when you go into the room and you feel the song and you actually enjoy what you're doing up there and singing. So I feel you were fine.
So that one didn't work out. But then I told Dina I was going to try out for Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And I tried out for Hamilton and I sang a song that I knew very well. We all know it. We're just ordinary people. And I've sang that song so many times. And I said, I'm singing that song by John Legend because I know it. And I did. And I got a call back. They called me back on a Friday. And, you know, I couldn't get in touch with them all weekend. And finally, I got in touch on Monday. And they're like, yeah, you got a call back. You need to sing these two songs. And what's your email address? And I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And then I had to learn two songs in a couple of days. And then I tried out. And the first song was Dear Theodosia. Mm-hmm. And I sang that. But the second song was It Must Be Nice to Have Washington on Your Side, the rap.
Yes. Yes.
And, I knew it, I learned it, and I forgot the rats.
Oh, no.
And they even gave me a chance. They said, you can hold the paper if you want. I said, no, I know it. And I was just so determined to do it without the paper. But I didn't even bring the paper.
That's crazy.
Because I asked, I said, can I try out again? And they let me try it again, and they had me send in a video. So, ladies and gentlemen, and I just thought of that. I said, well, why don't I ask them if I can try again? I'm like, what's the worst they can say is no. So if you want to try it again, I don't care if you don't see people doing it, ask. And the worst they can say is no, you know, but they said yes. So I got to do some more auditioning, Dina.
Let's do it. We should set up a Broadway audition boot camp because that's still a long-term dream of mine. And I haven't given that up yet, even though COVID definitely had me questioning it. It's still a desire.
I would love to do something like that because, you know, I just think when you have, I know it's a dream, and I'll tell you why I know it's a dream, because I was watching something on TV and it was the Hairspray. It was like a live taping of Hairspray, and they were singing and dancing, and you know, tears started coming to my eyes.
Which song? Do you remember the song?
I don't even know the name of the song. It was like at the end when it was all dancing and singing.
You
like,
can't stop the beat.
Yes, that song. Yes. That song. That song. And you know, tears are coming up because I'm like, you know, I can do that. I want to do that. I can do that.
You will do that.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, like you and I, we might be in Hamilton together Who knows? Because Zoe didn't know this. I told him at the brunch, because again, we hadn't seen each other in a while, that a year after he got the call back for Hamilton, I got a call back for Hamilton.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it was crazy because I remember thinking, like, y'all remember me? Like, I haven't auditioned for y'all in so long. I don't think I auditioned when Zoe auditioned. I think I auditioned a couple of months before he did, when the auditions were on the weekend, because I also teach full time. So when I saw there was an open call for Hamilton Saturday, 9 a.m. at Ripley Greer, I was like, all right, I'm in there. And they called me back, same thing. They only gave me 2 days to learn 2 songs. And I also messed up on the rap part. So I had to sing Helpless and Satisfied. And I was too fast ahead of the piano on the rap. And this is also like motivation, or to encourage the listeners out there, don't be afraid to stop and ask, hey, can I do that again? Because sometimes we think, oh my gosh, I only have one shot.
Yeah.
From Hamilton. I'm not throwing away my shot. But like, right, your shot is that moment, that 5, 10 minute, how many minutes they book you out in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's your whole shot. You got to take it, you know? And they said the same thing. Oh, don't worry about it. And I was like, no, but I will when I leave this room if I don't ask you to start over, because I learned this. I know how to rap on beat, you know?
Right.
Let me show y'all.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Oh, man. Let me know about that boot camp, because I have to keep my creative bones moving.
You know, oh, absolutely. It's happening.
This is good. This is good. I'm also co-leading a creative community group at my church, Liberty. And I'm glad I'm going to have something to tell them. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be auditioning soon again.
Yes. Oh, I love that. And Dr. King said in the script, I'm not ready to go. I still have more to do. Like, that's the reality of it. Yeah. Like, there's always more to do, because this country has a lot of work to do.
Oh yeah, he knew that. Like, I mean, you know, he's just a part of the process, of a huge part of the process, a huge part of a change agent, but didn't feel as though he was finished, you know. I mean, he died in his 30s.
Yeah,
you know, very young, you know. But
and something tells me that even had he been able to live longer, I still think no matter what age, he still would have said, I'm not ready to go yet. There's still much work to be done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's what makes him such a prolific leader. And I'm just so grateful for his life and the legacy that he led behind. Because even though I was upset watching the news today about the Breonna Taylor coverage, I was still filled with pride to see the protest and seeing the women rally together and speak so profoundly about why everyone in America must care about Breonna Taylor and the injustice.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's because of Dr. King. Like, yeah, he gave us the blueprint to fight, to use our voice, to come together.
It's like, it's hard to believe that somebody so powerful, you know, actually graced this earth with his presence, you know, with his life, you know, and somebody who cared so selfless and cared about the advancement of the human race so much that he was willing to put himself out there, you know, to be that tall tree that fell first, you know. So powerful. So powerful, even today. And that's power, you know, for you to still have an effect decades after you've left the earth.
Generations.
Wow.
So on that note, I say thank you, Dr. King, for your legacy. The revolution will not be televised. The marathon continues as a loud motorcycle goes off in the background. There you go. That's a sign the marathon continues.
Yes, yes. There you go. It does.
And thank you, Zoe. Thank you so much for blessing us with your time, your gifts, your talent, your wisdom. So grateful.
So grateful for you. I'm so grateful for connections that still are just as strong, even if they don't talk or see each other every day. I so appreciate that. And just being somebody who's a spark in my life and encourages me to be creative. And, you know, that is a blessing, you know, because, you know, creative people, we truly do need each other. And we, you know, we need and we thrive off of inspiration and connections. And it's a true blessing to be connected to amazing people and to an amazing person such as yourself. So thank you so much for having me. It's been truly my pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening today. If you want to hear more and continue the conversation and become a part of our community, please follow us on Instagram at @as_seen_by_us. See you next week.
We're elevated, creative blessings daily, so no use debating.